Good morning. We're back to the book of Proverbs today and thinking about friendship. I'm going to read the verse to you in four different translations, as the meaning of the first half of the verse is a shade unclear. So, Proverbs 18 verse 24, in the New International Version it reads, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." In the King James Version it says, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother." In the Message it says, "Friends come and friends go, but a true friend sticks by you like family." So all of that is a bit of a puzzle, because even Bible scholars find it hard to make a judgment on what the original writer meant to say. Now, not many of you will have given a second thought to this, but you have to realise that we have no original manuscripts of any of the books of the Bible. The ancient world had no printing presses, so originals were copied, and those copies were copied, and gradually those textual sources became quite complicated. So listen to this, because it will make your brain hurt. When the King James Version was printed 400 years ago, it relied heavily on the work of Erasmus about 100 years before that. Erasmus had been updating a Latin translation of the whole Bible known as the Vulgate, which was produced by Saint Jerome over 1,000 years earlier. But he may also have drawn on a 700-year-old Jewish copy of the Old Testament called the Masoretic Text, written in Hebrew but with clarifications. Now, tracking back again to Jerome, he had used the Septuagint when he was writing the Old Testament, a Greek translation of the Hebrew. Erasmus's copy became known as the Textus Receptus, and it was used as the basis for the King James Version. Some Christians believe it was inspired and continue to use it to this day for that reason. A few years after the King James Version was produced, the Samaritan Pentateuch was discovered and circulated. This was a copy of the ancient Samaritan Bible, Genesis to Deuteronomy, dating back over 2,500 years, and it had significant differences to the Jewish version of those five books. Then in 1947, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, including the oldest copies we now have of the Hebrew Old Testament, dating back just over 2,000 years. I don't expect you to remember any of that, but it may help you to understand that translation work is complicated. There isn't a correct translation of the Bible, let alone Proverbs 18, verse 24. And for whatever reason, translators prefer one manuscript over another. So you pick your way through those three alternatives, and there are different lessons to be drawn. The first one you remember in the New International Version, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin." Make sure you make good friendships. Too many demanding friendships will ruin your life. Or the King James Version, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly." If you want to have friends, you have to make the effort and be a friend. And then the Message, "Friends come and friends go." Well, friendships can be shallow or they can be deep and lasting. All different lessons that you can draw from the same verse, but different translations. So perhaps this morning I should reflect on friendship and cover all the options when it comes to translation. And let me take the Message translation as my text, as the language is inclusive rather than masculine. "Friends come and friends go, but a true friend sticks by you like family." Throughout my life, I've moved around a lot. With the exception of my sister and my aunt, I'm no longer in touch with anyone I knew before I became an adult. My parents moved house regularly. And by the age of 18, I'd lived in four different homes, and perhaps more significantly, four different counties: Middlesex, Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Kent. By the time I went to my first pastorate at the age of 26, I'd lived in a further four homes. Five of you include Spurgeon's College. Perhaps I reacted to so many moves because we were at our last church for over 17 years and we will eventually do 16 years here. So for the second half of my life, I can only lay claim to two homes. We didn't have social media or mobile phones back when I was young. If you moved away and wanted to stay in touch, you really had to write letters, and I didn't do that. 4 years ago, I went to a school reunion in Reading. It was 50 years since we had entered our secondary school at the tender age of 11, and it was fascinating to see how some people had changed out of all recognition. Plus, it was interesting to hear about career paths, but in the event, it was disappointing that none of my close friends turned up. So I can identify with those words, friends come and friends go. Even some seemingly strong friendships gradually melted away. They were far more than acquaintances or even colleagues, but our paths diverged and the energy to stay in touch faded. It must be different when you live in an area all your life. You see the same faces week after week. You share the ups and downs of each other's lives, the achievements and disappointments, the joys and the sorrows. For you, it may be that moving out of London would be a step too far. Certainly, if you're a person of colour, moving out of a city makes you suddenly much more conspicuous and people start asking you where you're from. Lois gets this all the time. When we're out of London, somebody says, "Where are you from?" "Forest Gate," she replies. "No, no, where are you from?" "Well, I was born in South Norwood." "No, I mean, where are you from?" People are unbelievably clumsy and make life uncomfortable for you. Centuries ago, very few people travelled. Most stayed in their villages their entire lives. The pool of potential life partners was fairly small. But by the time you married, you'd probably known each other all your lives. People who travelled aroused suspicion. So if I left my village and came to yours, you would immediately wonder whether I was to be trusted or whether I'd been kicked out of my village for doing something terrible. Travel was not straightforward. So let me come first to that phrase in the New International Version. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. Those of us who are parents fret a bit over our children finding good friends. We don't want them falling into bad company and getting up to mischief. So the quest for schools and even churches carries that as an important consideration. Do I want my child mixing with these children? Does the school have good strategies in place for bringing out the best in the children they teach? Years ago, I accompanied a Colombian family to a school interview in Lambeth. They had inadvertently missed the deadline for secondary school applications. And so the local authority had assigned them to the least popular school in the borough. We were interviewed by the deputy head, and during the course of that short interview, two things happened. First, a boy came into the study with blood dripping from his head, and then a teacher rushed in to say that there was a situation needing the deputy head's immediate attention. It may not have been as bad as it looked, but it was not very reassuring, and after 1 year there, the family managed to get their son into a better school. Our church had close contact with a woman with two sons who lived in a council block near the church. She was a long time drug addict, and her flat was constantly occupied by other addicts, which made life hard for the boys. The younger one was eventually removed and once with a foster family went away from London. He really began to flourish. But the mother did eventually come to ruin. The addiction had aged her prematurely. And the company she kept was not good. We had some great Christians in their 20s who gave her a lot of support, but ultimately to no avail. Now, you could be forgiven for concluding that such people are to be avoided because they only drag you down. But part of me wants to disagree with this view. I think many of us have a kind of leprosy theology. Back in Jesus' day, if you saw a leper, you steered well clear because you were afraid that you would be infected by them. But Jesus seemed to turn that view on its head. When he touched sick people, instead of being infected by their sickness, his health flowed into them and made them well. Now, I'm not suggesting you should seek out people with the coronavirus and make a point of touching them all, but my observation is that mixing with the right sort of people is the default for most of us. Whereas you could argue that most of the people Jesus mixed with were the wrong sorts. Back in the 1980s, when we used that term yuppies, young, upwardly mobile professionals, I was strongly influenced by a theology of a downwardly mobile God. And that's why Lois and I headed to inner city Camberwell. I can't say we were well prepared for such a ministry, but we learnt along the way. There was no shortage of people with broken lives, lacking the skills and resources to make things better for themselves. And it was nice to be able to help out. Yet most of the inner London churches were struggling to stay open. Most Christians were located in the suburbs, apparently embracing the view that following Jesus involved moving away from pain rather than towards it. Jesus had a reputation for hanging out with the wrong sorts, prostitutes, alcoholics, dodgy businessmen. Why don't we do that anymore? Whatever happened to a theology of downwardly mobile Christians? Anyway, I'm banging an old drum, so I'll shut up now. The King James versions, "a man that hath friends must show himself friendly," is also patently true. That may not come naturally to some people, but conversation and friendliness are skills that can and should be cultivated. They're what we call soft skills, and they're particularly important in church, where all too often we leave the welcoming of newcomers to someone else, and then it might not happen at all. You come downstairs for coffee and there's this newcomer sipping their drink with no one taking the slightest bit of interest in them. When I preached with a view here in May 2005, before you called me to be your minister, I spoke about Jesus' words in Matthew 5:48, "Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." The meaning is not primarily that we should be morally faultless, but that we should embrace the difficult challenges, including loving our enemies and welcoming the stranger. We say that we're shy, that we're awkward with newcomers. But how do you think they feel when they stand alone and wonder if the lack of any welcome is the measure of this church? Some of you are brilliant and you do extend a hand of welcome. And some of you probably argue that it's not your gift. Well, I don't think it's a gift. I think it's a duty we all have to work at. But let's come to the second half of the verse, about which there is no disagreement at all. A true friend sticks by you like family. Although I haven't kept up with my school friends, I do have some friendships which have been enduring ones. People I've known for over 40 years, people I've shared the ups and downs of my life with, people I care about and who care about me. There are colleagues who have now retired and we Zoom call each other regularly. I'm grateful for those friendships. We're still in touch with people from our previous churches. From time to time, I go back and conduct funerals. We journeyed together closely for some years and then our paths diverged, but the friendship is still there. You no doubt have similar friendships. The saddest thing is when someone lives too long and all their friends pass away before them. Took a funeral once for a 94-year-old man. 4 people attended. Nobody knew anything about his life before he retired. The eulogy felt thin. But actually, none of this is the point. As many of us have said to our children down the years, it's more important to be a best friend than to have a best friend. We're not to sit idly by, hoping that some true friend will wander into our lives. We are to be true friends. That's the whole point of Jesus' story of the Good Samaritan. "Who is my neighbour?" asked someone. And the resulting parable made it clear that he was asking the wrong question. Neighbour isn't a noun, it's a verb. You don't define your neighbours, you neighbour whoever happens to be around you. And it's the same with friends. You don't say, "You're my friend, you're not my friend." You strive to be a friend to everyone who crosses your path. Families sometimes fall out, although on the whole we stick together. But the precise words of the proverb are of a friend who is closer than a brother. The Bible talks of such a friendship between David and King Saul's son, Jonathan. Jonathan protected David from his father's jealousy, and after Jonathan's death, David ensured that his disabled son Mephibosheth was kept safe from any reprisals against Saul's family. When Jonathan died in battle, David penned this moving poem, "How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You are very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful. More wonderful than that of women." It was a later descendant of David that proved the greatest friend, laying down his own life for both his friends and his enemies. The Apostle Paul expressed it so well. "Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." He is the ultimate friend who sticks closer than a brother. He sees you as you are, a disturbing mix of virtues and vices, yet he pursues you in his love. As someone once observed, no matter how far you wander from him, it's only one step back. He is there, always seeking your best. And as you appreciate his friendship towards you, may your friendships with others take similar shape. Amen.